Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good to be back. Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Kalen Jones from The Ringer will jump on board today on things all around free agency in the National Football League. Lots been going on. The Cardinals making a couple of moves even as we speak. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. I am fresh. I am relaxed. I am coming off of a week in Texas. I did not know how burnt to a crisp that I was, but it happened. It happened. Actually, saw Spurges with us. So Jordan Spurgeon went to Palomar College, and he was a sports director, as was I. I saw my mentor from Palomar College down at the Gaylord Resort. Actually, I had breakfast with the great Russ Jackson. I don't know if that name ever went through the halls. I know this is very inside for everybody watching. Like, what are you leading with? But did you have Russ Jackson's name ever quoted to you at Palomar?
I don't think I remember the name. I might have seen it in KKSN. We had all the pictures of people. I feel like that name's familiar, but we never really talked about it much.
My picture is not in KKSN.
I don't think it is. No. I don't think it is. We got to get one in there. I'm going to talk to Zed.
What are you talking about? Is your picture in there?
It might be now. I don't know. I haven't checked.
In the Hall of Fame. You had a big week, it looked like, while I was gone. A lot happened, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot was going on. Did some stuff at school on PBR, and here did some ASU football stuff for the Fox Sports show. And it was
PBR,
a big week.
PBR, man. Look at you doing rodeo like this.
It was something really interesting. I never thought I would be into it, but just like being, they let us go up in the shooters, which for everyone out there, it's like when the bull's coming out with a rider, it's right on top of it. So the first couple of times the bull's coming out full force and it kind of knocks you back a little bit and you've got everyone there kind of taming him while the rider hops on. It was a different world for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. ASU football this Sunday is a spring game, right?
Yeah, or it's a spring practice open to the public, and then I think their game is the week after, if I'm correct. Yeah, but they're having a spring practice inside the stadium, open to the public and media, which will be really cool, like in the stadium, so everyone can go, because right now it's only four members, which has been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything to get excited about with ASU football other than the obvious? Like, people are like, well, what are you talking about? We have this player, and we have Jaden coming back. We have all these great running backs, wide receivers. Of course, there's things to be... Every year I hear the same old stuff. So if I ask you, when you're out there at ASU football, has there been anybody that's really like, wow, Brad, I did not know that this was going to be where this person would be this time around? Is it the receivers? They're so young. Is it Jaden adding weight? Give me something around ASU football.
Yeah, it's the defensive backs. When I went to practice last week, just seeing the battles one-on-one, like these receivers, everybody talks about, like, they're going to be good. And I see some potential there, but the defensive backs are still locking them down. I mean, you have Jack Jones still able to go up against a 6'7" Johnny Wilson and lock him down in practice. And he's got a serious height disadvantage. And I saw a couple of times breaking up passes in the end zone where all Johnny had to do was high point it. And Johnny would go up and make a good play, but Jones would come down. So just the secondary, seeing Chase Lucas come back again, seeing Jones, they've got some young kids in there, Tommy Hill, a freshman, was getting more and more reps from what I've been seeing and hearing. So I think the secondary was sort of the weak spot of the defense last year. Everyone thought it'd be the defensive line, but they played well. But this year, the secondary might actually be turning a page here.
All right. Well, get out of here. I know you have Steve Keim to jump on here momentarily, so I just want to get caught up with you. See ya.
Perfect. Later, Brad.
There's Spurge over at ASU doing his thing. All right, so I'm going to talk about the NCAAs in the next segment. The Cardinals... I tell you, when I'm bumping around in Texas and I start getting text messages from people saying, okay, so the Cardinals landed A.J. Green. It's fine. It's a one-year deal. It's very little, very minimal amount of money being put out. I think adding Hudson from the Raiders was the absolute best move that they've made here in the offseason, even better than J.J. Watt. I know the J.J. Watt thing is sexy and all that stuff. And A.J. Green is a name. But A.J. Green, to me, when you'd watch him play, it's like, okay, is this dude really still engaged in the game of football? And he's coming here on a minimal contract. And we have Fitz sitting over here on the side. I'm looking at the Fitz thing saying, okay, what possibly could be going on with Larry? Why is Larry still in a space where, one, he hasn't announced his retirement. Two, he hasn't announced that he's come back to the Cardinals. Three, he hasn't announced that he's signing with the Cardinals. Four, the Cardinals haven't said anything. You have teams like Tampa Bay sitting out there where he could automatically go chase the Super Bowl. You have the Rams that picked up DeSean Jackson looking for wide receivers to put alongside of Matthew Stafford. You have Minnesota where Fitz grew up. You have some places where, you know, Larry, it would make sense for him to go there, but he just is still sitting, waiting to see what move he makes next. And I find that part to be just fascinating because here in Arizona, most of you, while you love Larry Fitzgerald, you're just at this space where, well, this is what I'm getting from email, from seeing on social, from just talking with people. Oh, yeah, it'd be great if Fitz came back. Man, DeAndre Hopkins is really good. Man, it's so great having Christian Kirk. And there comes that point for some that they're just not going to let go of the aging veteran. They're just not. You know, Patrick Peterson getting $10 million to go to Minnesota for a year. God bless Patrick Peterson, because if you saw Patrick Peterson last year, it wasn't the same dude. And players don't like to hear that, and they get into all of the, oh, you're hating. No, it's a fact. Steve Nash at the end with the Suns, it was painful to watch him warm up. He couldn't move. And so the Suns kept him around to keep butts in seats, and that's not right. Luis Gonzalez at the end, it wasn't pretty at the end. And proud athletes don't want to hear this, but it's just the aging deal. In Fitz's case, while we're sitting here on the 22nd of March and there has not been one word about I am retiring, that to me says I still want to play. Why he hasn't done anything with the Cardinals, that says to me they can't figure out the financials. Because the owner has not come out and said, we are moving on. The general manager has not come out. And the general manager is speaking in about 13 minutes. So I don't know if that'll change. If today is the, yeah, you know what? We gave it our best college try, but we're moving on from Larry. And we signed a couple of offensive linemen. We have AJ Green here. And we appreciate all the years of Larry. And we are going to put him in the Ring of Honor and all that stuff, which will happen. But something's got to take place here because to me, seeing Larry just kind of dangle around out in the wind and the fact that he hasn't said, done the Drew Brees and said, I'm retired. And maybe it's Larry lining up other things like Drew Brees and NBC. That just didn't happen overnight. You've got to get all these things locked down and nailed down. And if it is him chasing Jerry Rice, if it is him saying, I can still play, do I think he could still catch some footballs? Sure. But coming off of being away for a week, I thought by now that this would be settled, and it has not been settled yet. And I'm not mad at anybody. It's just I'm trying to sit here and say, okay, what is really going on? Let's parse through all the PR nonsense, and there hasn't been much of that. Let's look at where the organization is in terms of where they are in the community, what they want to stand for, how they like to be a part of their aging players, older guys. And this one, in Larry's case, there hasn't been a Larry Fitzgerald that's come along. So you want to give him the utmost respect. You want to give him the utmost room. And then at the end, is it you lean in the microphone if you're Steve Keim? If it's Steve Keim, Michael Bidwell, and Larry Fitzgerald, the three of them together, saying, yeah, we just couldn't figure it out, or it's time to go on, or I've turned the page. It took me a long time to figure it out. Fine. But I'm just surprised we're sitting here the third week in March and he still hasn't moved in a direction one way or the other. The Suns winning last night over the Lakers is a who cares game in March. There was no LeBron James. There was no Anthony Davis. So there is no reason to go jump up and down and say, man, we are the greatest ever. We are the Suns. We are back. We are taking care of business. No, they didn't have LeBron and they didn't have Anthony Davis. So enough. The trade deadline for the Suns and the NBA is this Thursday. Really interesting time. You know, I was hoping they'd get P.J. Tucker. I think giving that grit and that toughness, P.J. Tucker not coming here. Blake Griffin, not coming here. And so you look around and say, is there a big out there that they could bring in and say, okay, this is what we've been lacking. We need some more toughness. We need some more muscle. That's where the Suns are this week. On the other side, I'm going to talk about Grand Canyon University and where the tournament is today, the Pac-12, and how impressive they've been. And a little bit about vacation, a little bit later on, Kalen Jones. It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. All right, I want to get into March Madness here, and then Kalen Jones from The Ringer will be with us to talk NFL free agency in about 10 minutes. So let's start with Grand Canyon University. Great run. Ran into a very good team in Iowa. Iowa's being taken down right now by Oregon as we speak. That's right, the tournament's going on here in the middle of the day on a Monday. Where Grand Canyon was, I can go all the way back to 2009. Russ Pennell was hired as their head coach. They were playing in little old Antelope Gym on campus, dumpy, dusty little spot. And Russ said, you need to meet Brian Mueller and Stan Meyer, the two head honchos over at GCU. Fine, went over, met with them. Brian walked me around on campus. Campus was like, probably like a Hamilton High School. You know, just some very nice buildings that felt like a high school. And he said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. 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 But basketball, Brad, is going to be what we are all about from an athletic standpoint. We're not going to do football. Football is very expensive. We actually think that soccer can be one of the programs that we can latch on to. We want to be like Gonzaga. And he told me that in 2009. Now, that's pretty lofty stuff, and people chuckled at that. They were still NAIA, then they had to go on probation, they had to play in things like the CIT or the CTI or the CBI, these tiny little tournaments. Russ is trying to recruit kids to come play at Grand Canyon on a hope and a prayer, and I could tell within a couple of years that the president wasn't on the same page as the coach. I'm in an airport in Las Vegas. I get a phone call. It's Jerry Colangelo. He says, you know why we're moving on from Russ. It's Jerry's involved with GCU. And it was Dan Marley who was being hired. And I told Jerry, as they're saying, shut your phones off. Jerry, you don't have to explain anything to me. This makes perfect sense, knowing the relationship between Dan and Jerry. So Dan Marley comes in, and Dan Marley was a good name, very, very good name. They built the arena on campus. They put together this entertainment, trying to make it like the Suns used to be back in the 90s, brought in a lot of the people that were at the Suns in the 90s when they were really good, and in the Nash era too, and Amari in the 2000s. It brought a lot of those people over. And so they've got something going, and Dan's playing some good teams, and who could forget when Louisville came into town, Rick Pitino said afterwards, toughest place to play, and all that stuff. And then I could start to see things changing with Dan on campus and with where Brian Mueller was and where Dan was. And it was pretty clear, okay, this isn't going to end well. And it didn't. And it ended last year, and like 3 days later, I wanted Randy Bennett to be the head coach at St. Mary's to come here to GCU. I thought that Randy did a terrific job at St. Mary's. Bryce Drew was not on my radar. He was at Vanderbilt. They were crushed. He went over to TV. But they decided to go Bryce Drew, and obviously it was the right choice. Bryce comes in, and he brings in Mittgard, the center from Wichita State, as a transfer at 7'2". Mittgard plays well for them. He gets the kids to buy in. The players become close. Gabe McLaughlin was a terrific transfer in from Bashan. Long story short, in a year's time, everything is flipped in terms of on the court. There is now momentum. There is now a feeling that Bryce Drew is the right guy. Dan wasn't the wrong guy. Dan's time just ran out on the college front. I think Dan, if he were to put everything over the side, the same with Russ, both of them would say, yeah, it's better that I had moved on. I just think it's no player, no former player in Dan's case likes to get fired. And in Russ's case, it was just riding on the wall, and he was trying to swim upstream, playing in tough, tough games, little environment, and the light wasn't at the end of the tunnel in terms of becoming Division I. So all that to say is, where do we go from here? I have said repeatedly that Grand Canyon can be, not that they are, can be Gonzaga. They can be Creighton. They can be Marquette. And yeah, those are in bigger conferences now. Gonzaga is still sitting over in the West Coast Conference. They are very seldom challenged. It's just a fact. But the facts remain that in the West Coast Conference, you're very seldom going to get more than one team in. Like the WAC, the only way the WAC's going to get an at-large, the only way other than the conference champ, is that team that is running the table and they're beating teams from bigger conferences and they've won 26 or 27 and they are not sitting there having Utah Valley State held over their head or Cal State Bakersfield held over their head. It's just where the WAC is right now. Abilene Christian beat Texas the other night. Abilene Christian is in this new WAC. It's a good get. So next year, you tell me, New Mexico State probably is going to be better. Abilene Christian made the tournament this year, beat Texas this year. GCU, it's not going to be a gimme for them every year. But I think because of the building, the fan stuff, CBS could not get enough of the student section doing their thing on Saturday afternoon. They couldn't get enough of it. And it was pretty clear that they're not going to beat Iowa. But how many times did they come back from breaks showing GCU fans and then they showed the Iowa fans all bundled up on their phones, you know? It was kind of like they were mocking the Iowa fans, I felt like. But it was great TV for Grand Canyon University. They'll take that in the offseason and build a marketing plan. I don't know if Midgard would come back. Every player this year has been given another year of eligibility. This whole team could return. Could. But now it is taking the schedule and ramping it up even more. It's all well and good to play fine teams. San Diego State is a fine team, okay? But if you've got to go to the Gonzaga route, then you need to be playing U of A, ASU. I know they'll have ASU next year because it's a home and home, and the game will be over in Tempe next year, and that's great for the community. But you have to play some blue bloods. You've got to play the Kentuckys and the Kansases and the Dukes and the North Carolinas, and they have in the past. I'm not saying that they haven't. But what I am saying is if you want to ensure that you're going to be Gonzaga, you've got to go to Oklahoma State and go play Oklahoma State. You got to go down to LSU and play LSU. You're not going to convince a team like Texas to come to GCU in all likelihood. You know, this is where Jerry Colangelo behind the scenes has to work his magic. For years, I've heard Gonzaga wants to come here and play. Jerry's talked to Mark Few, and then it doesn't happen. We'll get Gonzaga here. Would UCLA ever come over and play GCU? Not a chance, in my opinion. But maybe I'm wrong. Happens. You know, getting Indiana to come here, getting some other programs. And then there is the whole case of if Bryce Drew can turn around Grand Canyon University, at what point is he going to have the itch to scratch to say, hey, you know, Indiana's open. I'm not saying this year because Indiana is open right now. But he's the type of player that could say, you know, I'll go back to the SEC. I can go turn around this program. I like everything that happened for GCU. There is no downside to this at all. This is a Cinderella season. They won the conference tournament. They punched their ticket. They go to the dance. They get beat by Iowa, and there's nothing wrong with that. So that's GCU. What the Pac-12 is doing is nothing short of phenomenal. I watched Oregon State last night take apart Oklahoma State. That game was, they're pretty much in control. I mean, Oklahoma State would make some runs. Oklahoma State has Cade Cunningham, who was regarded as the best player in the tournament, and they're gone. You know, Oregon is beating up on Iowa last I checked. They're playing today. USC plays Kansas tonight in primetime. Evan Mobley's one of the best players, if not the best player. I had to turn in my Wooden Player of the Year award today and had to rank players and let's just say Evan Mobley was up there on my ballot. UCLA plays Abilene Christian. If UCLA wins and they make the Sweet 16 after the way things ended for them at the Pac-12 tournament, Colorado plays Florida State today. So if you're an Arizona State fan and you're looking at this, or if you're a U of A fan is saying, well, we were on probation this year. We turned ourselves in. Sean had a great season. We're going to be fine next year. Of course, that's what U of A fan is going to say. Me, it's Sean's last year. He doesn't have a contract extension. Who knows what other shoes are going to drop on all of this? And, you know, good luck with that. Arizona State, how many players are going to come back? When the Jalen House news came out, that was surprising. No, it was surprising to me that he would transfer away. Is that because Bobby's leaving, or is it because the Houses, because Eddie's got to be involved in this, weren't happy with Bobby? Bobby, from my understanding, has been recruiting, so it's not like he's out the door on this. The overarching theme of this tournament has been the committee got it wrong. They misseeded. I just look at it and say, this is a year unlike any other. And so you can't figure out how a team like Oral Roberts comes in as a 15th seed and takes care of Florida the other night. You can't explain how Abilene Christian takes down Texas. Upsets are part of the deal. It's just, is everybody on a more even playing field this year because COVID knocked teams so far down? Like what happened to Virginia Commonwealth against Oregon? That's tragic for those kids. It's awful. But it happened, and you have to roll with it. There's to think that, you know, a Loyola could take down Illinois this year. Yeah, anything's possible this year. I know it sounds, you know, pretty easy to lean on that, but not every team is all made out what they usually are. They're just not. And so the mental drain on this, the physical drain on it, teams have just tried to get through the season. You try getting up every morning and having your nose swabbed between 7 and 8 a.m. every day since November. And you're a college kid. You have to be up at 7 and 8 a.m. College kids every day. The story about the women's tournament, I can just tell you that as the original play-by-play voice, the Phoenix Mercury, and having two daughters involved in women's basketball, it's always been this way. I don't know how other else to put it. The game's played below the rim, which does not attract a big fan base. Don't know how else to explain it. And I'm a fan of the game. I've been a supporter of the game. I do as much as I can. But the TV ratings are what the sponsors are looking at. Until there's some sponsors that say, you know what, we are just not about how many clicks are on stories or how many impressions there are, things aren't going to change. You can call out the stuff with the weight room in San Antonio was disgusting. It just shows how little attention to detail and empathy, and when they call it the girls playing tonight rather than the women's tournament, they don't call women's madness. There's some people that don't like the term March Madness because it talks about mental health. So there's all these things swirling around on the women's side. I just watch the basketball. But until you have people at the very top on the broadcast end and on the advertising end that change their tune, it's just going to be like, I'm not saying it's going to be like, it's going to continue because you have those same groups that are saying, are our sponsors really getting the bang for their buck? Rather than, you know, we're going to put the women's tournament on big CBS in primetime, and if it doesn't draw the same ratings points, we don't care. That's where we are. You're not going to see TNT and TBS and others take full networks and give them to the women's basketball tournament. I'd like to see that. ESPN tries, ABC tries, and hopefully through time. I've been watching this stuff for 25 years, so the disgusting display by the NCAA over the weekend in San Antonio, where they don't have the right food, the same amount of food, or even good food, no weight room, come on. And you can say you're better than that, but there's just incompetent nincompoops at the top of the food chain when it comes to the NCAA. You know, I sit here and look at the Pac-12 network and what an absolute train wreck disaster it's been and how they just let people run that thing blindly and put garbage out on the air and nobody steps in and says, hey, by the way, nobody's watching this, just so we're clear. It's not just the women's tournament. It's just throughout the incompetence. It's commitment to incompetence that I see. All right, Kalen Jones on the other side from The Ringer on the NFL and the offseason. I'm Brad Sussmat. As promised, news and notes. You know, I've had Kalen Jones on here from The Ringer a few times, and people respond and say, it's good to hear a fresh voice. Well, here's the thing. I don't care about fresh voices. I only care about content, OK? Okay. And if Kalen doesn't deliver, he's just not here. But he delivers every week with The Ringer. You can check out all of his content. It's good to see you as free agency is now rolling through. What has caught your eye, Kalen, right off the bat of free agency this year?
I was honestly surprised by the lack of receiver market. Obviously, the big names that were in there were Kenny Golladay, Juju Smith-Schuster, Corey Davis, obviously signed to a deal probably sooner than most expected. But the fact that Golladay and Juju Smith-Schuster, the fact that those two had to wait so long in the free agency, I know it was only 4 or 5 days, but you know that's an eternity. And especially when you talk about the type of money that was available in a cash-strapped year for guys. So I was really shocked that you know Golladay didn't end up signing until this past weekend. Juju Smith-Schuster didn't sign or re-sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers until later on, 4 days in the free agency. So that was a really interesting development. Obviously, again, cash-strapped year, but those are the faces of the league. You would expect them to be priority guys, but it's been an effect of COVID-19. It's had its impact on the league.
Yeah, with the league, the cap down, what, $15, $16 million, people are just looking to spend differently. Golladay going to the Giants, did that seem like the right fit? It sounded like Baltimore was going to be a landing spot for him. Got anything on that, why Golladay said, I'm going to the New York Giants?
Well, I just don't think that he had a really significant market. I mean, the Bears were in the mix as well. Obviously, you mentioned Baltimore being a receiver-needy team. But I think that he fits with the Giants pretty well. You plug him in next to Sterling Shepard. I think that you have a formidable receiving core out there. So I think moving forward, when you look at the terms of the deal, it was also probably the best that he was going to get when you look at the $18.5 million range instead of the $20 million that he probably would have gotten had the cap been in a normal year, had it gone up like it does every other single year. But I think that, you know, he maximized the value that he was able to get on the market this year. I know that there was mention of him potentially going to the Bengals on a one-year deal, doing more of a prove-it type deal, so that way he could re-enter free agency. But in this way, he secured his money and was able to, you know, cash in on what he was able to get after missing out on that kind of money in previous years.
I was really surprised, Kalen, with what Buffalo did or has done so far. You know, it used to be Buffalo would be a place where a guy couldn't find a deal and he'd just go play. And now you see a guy like Emmanuel Sanders say, okay, I see what Josh Allen's all about. And then you see a guy like Mitchell Trubisky say, okay, they need somebody there. What about the Bills? They're just quietly going about their business now like they're one of the best teams in the NFL.
Yeah, you got to give credit to general manager Brandon Bean. Top to bottom, the Buffalo Bills might be, you know, one of the most well-constructed teams in the NFL, especially when you consider the development side of it. I think that's why Mitchell Trubisky, you know, looked at Buffalo and said that's an intriguing fit because of the way that Brian Daboll has been able to develop Josh Allen over the past years, going from a guy with immense talent but not being able to put it together consistently. But we saw the growth and the maturation over the past year. Emmanuel Sanders, you mentioned, as being one of the most reliable slot weapons in the NFL for several years, him going to Buffalo and fitting into that receiving group, which arguably already was one of the most talented top to bottom when you talk about Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, Andre Roberts, who was formerly there, Gabriel Davis, Tyler Kroft, the tight end formerly. But, I mean, it's a really, really intriguing offense that gives them a shot to compete with teams like the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens and anyone else out of the AFC moving forward. So they're definitely a well-constructed team. So it makes them a really interesting team to join.
Kalen Jones with The Ringer covering the National Football League. All right, let's zero in on the Arizona Cardinals. Go right down the list, and let's just start with J.J. Watt. What did you think of the move?
I was surprised. I know that a lot of people had predicted that J.J. Watt would go to a premier contender. And I think that list included, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland Browns, the Green Bay Packers, like, and even the Buffalo Bills. Like, those are teams, and you could argue maybe some of them aren't in the same position going forward. But I thought that coming off last year, J.J. Watt was probably going to end up on one of those teams. For him to choose the Cardinals was really significant for Arizona because not only, you know, did it prove, I guess, in terms of free agency-wise, that they are a destination point for guys who are looking to join a team that is up and coming and promising, but it was surprising to me because it kind of rivals the situation that you saw J.J. Watt in earlier in his career with all those Houston Texans teams, because they had so many opportunities where they looked like a potential budding contender, but never were really able to get over the top. So I'm curious, because again, this is only Cliff Kingsbury's third season on the job. I know that Kyler Murray has shown that he can be an impressive young quarterback, arguably will be one of the best out of the NFC over the next few years. But it's interesting that J.J. Watt decided, you know, instead of going to a bona fide playoff contender, he went to a team that still has an upward trajectory as opposed to being established firmly as an NFC contender. And it's a really tough division. The NFC West is not forgiving. So it's not a guarantee that Arizona, even with J.J. Watt, is able to get there. But he's a really good fit when you talk about what Vance Joseph does in terms of his run-stopping ability at this stage in his career. He's very versatile. I think that he'll provide some really good interior pass rush for the Cardinals going into next year.
A.J. Green coming here. Here's a guy that, does he have the passion still for the game, is what I heard in talking with some NFL people the last few days after the signing. He comes in here on a one-year deal.
Yeah, that's an interesting fit too, because again, that might, the passion bit of it is a good question. But I think the fact that he signed on a 1 year, $3 million deal, I know that the number said, you know, it's 1 year, $6 million. But when you look at what's guaranteed in terms of base salary, it's a 1 year, $3 million deal. It's not significant money for a guy of A.J. Green's. When you look at his resume and what he's able to produce, it's not saying much. So I think that it's a reasonable deal. He's a veteran who's proven, you know, over and over and over again that he's capable of playing at a high level when healthy. And I think over the last stretch of, or the last bit of last year, we saw him kind of rounding the form with Joe Burrow as he started, or excuse me, with the Cincinnati's collection of quarterbacks there, Ryan Finley, et cetera, as he started to get more and more comfortable with the offense. And I think that you could see that translate into Arizona's offense this year. I'm curious how he fits in opposite of DeAndre Hopkins. He's not a burner. And I expected the Cardinals to probably pursue a veteran who had proven to be a deep threat or even a younger target, but you get stability in A.J. Green. And I think that's really important for Kyler Murray's development. When you have a guy like DeAndre Hopkins already there, you don't know what Larry Fitzgerald's future is. So why not bring in a guy like A.J. Green to really solidify that receiver room and maybe help mentor whoever else is brought in at a younger level?
I have to tell you, Kalen, I really like the addition. It's not going to be big headlines of Rodney Hudson. I think if you look at where Kyler is and Cliff is, and those two are tied together, this is their third year. If you don't push through, you're going to start to feel the heat. I think there's going to be some heat on Cliff no matter what. It's the way it works in the NFL. But in Rodney Hudson coming here on the offensive front, again, not going to raise headlines, not going to be the one that grabs all the attention. I think a real solid move by Steve Keim.
Yeah, that was arguably the best move the Cardinals made this entire offseason. When you talk about Rodney Hudson, he's arguably a top two, top three center in the NFL. And what the Cardinals were able to do was provide some interior protection for Kyler Murray. And I know that last year, watching back, I know that his mobility allows him to thrive potentially in situations where pass rush has been able to penetrate. But, you know, allowing him to sit in the pocket and really get through his progressions, I think having Rodney Hudson will allow him to do that more consistently, especially, you know, when you look at what they were able to do in terms of pairing Hudson with the addition of Kelvin Beachum. You can tell that Keim is really targeting the offensive line and allowing Kyler Murray to, you know, have some opportunity to develop and really sit and learn how to read through NFL defenses instead of, you know, kind of being reliant on DeAndre Hopkins like he was last year.
Kalen Jones with The Ringer covering the National Football League does a great job. He's with us for a few minutes. Before I get you out of here, draft now about a month away. I keep hearing that Kyle Pitts is going to be a guy that may turn this draft upside down because there is the, is he the next Travis Kelce? Is he the next Tony Gonzalez? Is he the, you know, the next Rob Gronkowski? What are you hearing about the Florida tight end and maybe the top part of this draft with him?
He's one of the most impressive players in the entire class. I know that people like saying that he could potentially slot in as a receiver, which when you look back at his tape, that dynamism is obviously you know, very, very, very apparent. And I think the Cardinals would, you know, it would be in their interest to really target him in the draft. Obviously, Dan Arnold not re-signing with the Cardinals, going to the Carolina Panthers this offseason, it leaves a significant hole at tight end for the Cardinals, and they already needed to address that position to begin with. I think that you give Kyler Murray a really significant safety valve and someone that's really, in terms of scheme, you give the Cardinals a chess piece like Kyle Pitts, who can line up as an inline or the wide tight end and also split him out wide. It really gives Cliff Kingsbury someone that can really, really, you know, manipulate defenses by moving him around both as a blocker and a receiver. He would be a really, really significant option if the Cardinals were able to land him in the draft.
Anything else about the draft, you know, whether it's not related to the Cardinals or is, the year hearing quarterback movement, the top four or five, does it seem like it's pretty well set as to who's going where? Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Jacksonville. Nothing's changed on that front. What are you hearing as we get about a month away from the draft, Kalen?
Yeah, so I think the top two is pretty much chalk at this point. I think you're going to have Trevor Lawrence go number one and Zach Wilson go number two to the Jets from BYU. As far as the other two quarterbacks, though, I would not be shocked if you had the top four quarterback prospects, Lawrence, Wilson, Justin Fields from Ohio State, and then Trey Lance from North Dakota State. I wouldn't be shocked if all four ended up going within the top eight of the draft. So I think obviously they're immensely talented and potential franchise changers, but I would keep an eye on what could end up being a really historic quarterback class. It's living up to the hype already in a lot of draft circles.
That's Kalen Jones. He's with The Ringer. Great job as always. And we're back with more after this timeout.